This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Well, this is a case I hope we never have to talk about again.
But we do, because a jury in Manchester, New Hampshire, looked at evidence in the case of Anna Montgomery. They heard the testimony. They sat through the forensic details, the timelines, the photographs, and they came back unanimously guilty. Second-degree murder. Anna Montgomery beat his 5-year-old daughter, Harmony, to death in December of 2019. That verdict came in February of 2024. The New Hampshire Supreme Court, in their infinite wisdom, has revised that murder conviction in a unanimous decision. And if that sentence alone doesn't make your stomach turn, hold on! Because the reason it got overturned has nothing to do with whether Adam Montgomery actually did this to his daughter. It has everything to do with how the trial was run. It matters. Cross your T's, dot your I's, kids. Because not doing the work correctly, or if another court determines you didn't do it correctly, there are repercussions. Look at Alec Murdaugh. And now the monster that literally hauled his daughter's body around in a duffel bag and still won't tell anybody where it is. Well, now, according to that court, he's not a murderer. Harmony Montgomery's body has never been found. Adam Montgomery knows where she is. At his sentencing, prosecutors offered to cut years off his sentence. All he had to do was tell them where he put his daughter's remains, and he sat there in silence like the douche that he is. And the system that was supposed to deliver justice for this little girl has handed him a procedural win. Prison justice still ain't working yet now, is it? There's something about how this appeal even exists that really should make you furious. Because the legal maneuver that brought this conviction down, Adam Montgomery's own defense team originally asked for it, and we're going to get to that. But first, I want to be clear about who Adam Montgomery is, because if you're not familiar with this case, and maybe you aren't, a lot of the drama here happened several years ago. That's why I was hoping this was done. Because when the legal language starts flying, joinder, severance, procedural evidence, it's easy to lose sight of the man at the center of it. So let's not. And we're going to try and translate this for you so it makes a lot more sense. Because the legalese is like, huh? Why? Adam Montgomery has 21 entries in his New Hampshire criminal history alone. At 18 years old, he stabbed another teenager and shoved him out of a moving car over a drug deal gone wrong. He was sentenced to 4 years for that. Because in New Hampshire, no big deal. He served 383 days, like I said, because they're no big deal. He's a suspect in the unsolved 2008 killing of Darlin Guzman in Lynn, Massachusetts. A 28-year-old computer repairman shot to death in a parking lot outside a convenience store. Montgomery has never been charged in that case. It remains open. And in 2014, he was charged with shooting a man in the face in Haverhill, Massachusetts, after crossing the state line to buy drugs. Governor Chris Sununu called him, and this is a direct quote, a monstrous drug dealer with previous convictions, including shooting someone in the head and a separate armed attack on two women in Massachusetts. That's who Adam Montgomery is, convicted felon, known drug user, a man with a documented history of violence stretching back to his teenage years and touching two states. And in February 2019, a Massachusetts juvenile court judge looked at all of it, every arrest, every conviction, every violent incident, and decided Anna Montgomery was not an unfit parent. No. The judge, Judge Mark Newman, by the way, is his name. Mark Newman, Judge Mark Newman, awarded him sole custody of 5-year-old Harmony. After all that, said, you go be dad. You go just change your ways. I'm sure nothing bad will ever happen here. A little girl with glasses who liked M&Ms, a child who had been living safely with a foster family, who had a mother fighting to get clean and to get her back. The court moved so fast, it didn't even wait for the required home study to be completed. Massachusetts DCF had asked New Hampshire to conduct one. Before it was finished, the judge placed Harmony in Adam Montgomery's care. In my opinion, I think the judge should be placed in Adam Montgomery's care. For a week. See what happens, judge. See how, if you feel confident, you felt so confident that he could handle his daughter. How about he handles you? How about he handles your daughter for a week? Does that sound good? I think that should be kind of the, like, here's the deal, judges. If you're going to make the decision of putting children in the custody of monsters, you also have to, at random, spin a wheel every time you do it. And the wheel might land on your daughter gets to go spend a week first. And if you're not comfortable spinning that wheel, with that being a very real possibility, that your own child gets to go spend a week with the monster you're letting have access to their own children or other people's children, then maybe don't make that fucking decision. I don't know. Just a thought. That, or it's like, if you fail, we're going to feed you to sharks. If something horrible happens because of your decision of you letting Adam Montgomery have access to his daughter as the main caretaker, you make that choice. Despite all the evidence, you will be fed to sharks if something happens to her. I think that's a fair trade-off. Does anyone object? Does anyone object to letting the judge be eaten by sharks alive while broadcast live on national television? We do it in front of the White House. Once the UFC thing is done, Shark Tank for eating bad judges. I'm all about it. How about you? 10 months later, she was dead. Shark Tank! And I ain't talking about the one where you come up with great business ideas either. Or how about a dunk tank with sharks in it? And then the family members that lost their loved one because of the judge's poor decision get to throw the oversized balls at the tank, to which the platform will drop out, and then the judge gets eaten by the sharks. I mean, it's not a guarantee you're going to get eaten by the sharks, but you just have to be confident enough in your decision that you don't want to put yourself in that sort of scenario to be eaten by sharks. I think, again, fair trade-off. The caseworker assigned to check in on Harmony after the report started coming in. He had a connection to Adam Montgomery that should have disqualified him from the case entirely, and the details matter. Hold on to that. That's coming up. Here's what the jury heard at trial. December 7th, 2019, the Montgomery family is living in a car in Manchester, New Hampshire. They'd been evicted, Adam and his wife Kayla and their children, because there's more. Crammed in a vehicle they were using as a home. They'd been to the methadone clinic. Surprise, surprise. They were driving to get fast food. Harmony had a bathroom accident in the car because, well, you're living in your car and you're on meth and you're a piece of shit. I'm not surprised. Your children may have some problems in those areas. That does tend to be an area that there's acting out in. There's areas where the anxiety takes over. It's very understandable. Kayla Montgomery testified that Adam then punched his daughter in the head repeatedly because she wet her pants at stoplights while he drove. By the time the car broke down later that night, Harmony was dead. She was 5. Again, I'm really surprised prison justice has not caught up to you yet, Adam Montgomery. What's going on back behind bars? Are they protecting you too much? There's a broomstick waiting for your ass. And then came the cover-up. This is where you need to sit with the details, because this is who Adam Montgomery is when nobody is watching. He put his daughter's body in a duffel bag. He kept her in the trunk of the car. When the weather was cold enough, he moved her into the banks of snow, then to a cooler. Then he hit her in a ceiling vent at a homeless shelter where the family was staying. Then into a walk-in freezer at a pizza shop where he worked. He used lime to try and speed up decomposition. And in the spring of 2020, months after Harmony died, Adam Montgomery rented a U-Haul truck and drove somewhere between Manchester and the Massachusetts border. He disposed of what was left of his daughter along that route. Harmony Montgomery has never been found. And her disappearance went unnoticed by authorities for nearly 2 years. 2 years. Nobody in the system, not child services, not the courts, not a single agency in either state realized this little girl was gone. It wasn't until Harmony's mother, Crystal Sorey, went to Manchester police in late 2021 that anyone started looking. Sorey had been getting clean, fighting her way back, trying to find her daughter. She was the one who sounded the alarm, not the state, not the agencies. A mother who'd lost custody and crawled her way back to sobriety, only to discover her child had been dead for 2 years and really nobody had noticed. At his own jury selection, Adam Montgomery walked into the courtroom smiling, tongue out. He then refused to attend most of his own trial, choosing to stay in his jail cell. And at sentencing, when prosecutors offered to recommend a lighter sentence if you just tell him where Harmony's body was within 7 days, he said nothing. His attorney called the offer a stunt. Montgomery sat there like a man holding the last card he'd ever get to play. Crystal Sorey addressed the court directly. She told him she had a life worth living, unlike your own. And it bothered you to your core that she was nothing like you and everything like me. And Harmony's younger brother, Jameson, 7 years old at the time, sent a message through his adoptive parents. I hope I get to see her again. I love my sister. I miss her. I hope she's eating M&Ms in heaven. I hope her glasses are safe and not broken. A 7-year-old is worried about his dead sister's glasses. That's who this case is about. Not Adam Montgomery's constitutional rights. Again, judges, Shark Tank. Boom. I think I couldn't see a better put all the judges on the bench. That's going to go into the water. But here's where we have to talk about why the murder conviction fell apart, because the answer matters, even if it is infuriating, even if the Shark Tank sounds genius. It is. I do feel this is a genius idea. Adam Montgomery was tried on two charges at the time in December of 2019, killing and the fatal beating. And a separate incident from July of that year when he gave Harmony a black eye that was witnessed by multiple family members and neighbors. The trial court judge, Amy Mensner, allowed both charges to proceed together in a single trial. The problem, according to the New Hampshire Supreme Court, is the evidence supporting the July incident was overwhelming. Multiple independent witnesses came forward. Harmony's uncle, Kevin Montgomery, reported it directly to child services. Neighbors saw the injuries. There was no question about what happened in July. But the evidence for the December killing, the fatal night, rested almost entirely on one person, Kayla Montgomery, Adam's estranged wife, the other piece of shit in this case, a woman who served prison time for lying to the grand jury investigating Harmony's disappearance, a woman who neglected and negotiated a deal with prosecutors in exchange for her testimony. Another one who really just don't even, you know, we don't need to ask questions. Just there's some hungry sharks over there. And here's the part I told you about earlier, too. The part that should make your blood boil. Adam Montgomery's defense team originally asked for those two charges to be tried together. They requested the joinder. Then once they saw how the evidence was shaping up, once they realized the rock solid July case was going to sit right next to the weaker murder case and make it look stronger by association, they tried to get the charges separate. Oh shit, that's not going to work out well for us. You should have thought of that before you killed your kid. The trial court said no. The Supreme Court said that was wrong. The court should have bent to Adam's needs. You got the state effing everything up again. Associate Justice Brian Gould, writing for a unanimous court, found that the corroborating evidence, the concealment, the lies, the tampering, the months of hiding his daughter's remains only proves what Adam did after Harmony died. It does not prove he was the one who killed her on December 7th. Without the July evidence boosting Kayla's testimony, the court concluded the jury may not have convicted him of murder. There's a Shark Tank waiting for you, my friend. If you're very confident on it, are you confident? Are you confident enough not to sit on the Shark Tank? That gets. Are you confident enough that is a good decision? Or are you confident enough to put your own kids, you know, in a room with Adam Montgomery for a week? The defense theory was always this. Kayla killed Harmony while Adam was out that night. Adam helped cover it up, and the Supreme Court essentially said that theory never got a fair fight because the strong July evidence bled into the weaker murder case and tipped the scales. The state has announced it is disappointed and intends to retry the murder charge separately. Former New Hampshire homicide prosecutor Jesse O'Neill has said this ruling is about procedural safeguards, not about Adam Montgomery's conduct, and that the prosecution presented a strong case for murder. The attorney general's office said it remains confident in the facts and the evidence. So the legal path forward exists, but the fact that the state needs a second chance at all is kind of the problem, because this is the second time the system has failed Harmony Montgomery. The first time killed her. Remember the caseworker, the one with the connection to Adam Montgomery? His name is Demetrius Soros. He was a child protection social worker with the New Hampshire Division for Children, Youth, and Families. But 15 years before he was assigned to Harmony's case, Soros had been a youth counselor at the Sonora Youth Detention Center, and Adam Montgomery had been one of his charges. According to Crystal Sori's lawsuit against the state, Soros reportedly told Adam's family he should never have been assigned to the case, but he took it anyway. Family members and neighbors started calling DCYF in July of 2019 to report what was happening to Harmony. Uncle Kevin Montgomery reported the black eye. He told them Harmony was regularly beaten, spanked, forced to clean bathrooms with a toothbrush, called disgusting by Kayla. He reported drug paraphernalia all over the house, and the DCYF worker who took Kevin's call questioned him on the accuracy of his dates. Kevin told them, and this is from the lawsuit, "This is why children die," he told them. "This child was punched clear in the eye socket with full force." Soros eventually visited the home, according to the lawsuit. He found it filthy. No heat, no electricity, rotting food, drug paraphernalia everywhere. Both Adam and Kayla told him their house guest was the one in relapse, not them. Soros saw bruising and redness around Harmony's eye. He never spoke to the little girl alone. He never spoke to Adam. He never contacted police. And then he sent an email to the Manchester Police Department that read, "I think you folks are all set. I saw the children and did not observe any bruises, marks, etc." Sharks for you too. Manchester police responded to the Montgomery residence at least 16 times between January 2019 and January 2020. Domestic disputes, reported concerns involving the children, the condition of the home, 16 calls, and Harmony was still in that house. The state of New Hampshire settled Crystal Sori's lawsuit for $2.25 million. A court has since ordered Adam Montgomery to pay $15.5 million in a civil wrongful death judgment. Oh, I'm sure that's going to be coming sometime soon. Of course, he'll never pay a dollar of it, because a number exists as a record of what Harmony's life was worth to a system that spent it basically like loose change. And now that same system, the one that handed Harmony to a violent felon, is the one that saw the bruises and wrote emails saying everything was fine. The one that lost track of a five-year-old girl for two full years has given Adam Montgomery a procedural victory on his murder conviction. Good job, New Hampshire. How's that cheddar? Harmony's brother Jameson's adoptive parents, Jonathan Miller and Bob Ward, said it plainly. "We are absolutely disgusted. More protection is in place for this monster than Harmony Montgomery ever received." Adam Montgomery is 36 years old. Unless one of you behind bars can make it this number stop, make that your goal for 2026. He's 36. Let's not get to 37. I don't know how that happens or what you do. I'm not saying you should do any. I'm just saying goals. He's sitting in a correctional facility in Virginia. He still faces 43.5 years on the convictions that stand, plus 32.5 years in unrelated firearms charges. He's not getting out. That, however, is not the point. The point is that every system that was supposed to protect Harmony Montgomery, the courts that placed her with a monster, the caseworkers who saw the bruises and looked away, the prosecution that built its case in a way that left the murder conviction exposed, every single one of them failed her, alive and dead. And they still are. And guess what? There's more children in New Hampshire than just Harmony Montgomery. Imagine the ones that are still alive being tortured by the system that doesn't give a shit and protects predators like Adam Montgomery. The man who knows where harmony is has decided that the last piece of power he holds over his dead 5-year-old daughter is keeping her location a secret. A little girl whose brother wants to know her glasses aren't broken. She is somewhere between Manchester and Massachusetts, and she's been waiting long enough. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. This is such an enraging case. Weigh in. We'll keep following. God damn it, we're going to have to follow another trial of this monster. This is such a draining case. Unless you want to be a superstar from behind bars and you got nothing to lose. You could solve the world's problem of not having to have this guy go into a courtroom ever again. Just saying. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm not insinuating anything. I'm not encouraging anything bad, illegal, or violent. I'm insinuating you get in his head and you convince him that just plead guilty and just be done with it. That's what I'm insinuating. That and sharks. Lots of fucking sharks. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The New Hampshire Supreme Court unanimously reversed Adam Montgomery's second-degree murder conviction in the death of 5-year-old Harmony Montgomery. Yeah, I know. Not because anyone found new evidence. Not because anyone is claiming he's innocent. Because the trial court let the murder charge ride alongside a separate assault charge in front of the same jury, something that actually the defense of Adam Montgomery wanted. Well, the Supreme Court said the stronger case contaminated the weaker one, and now guess what? He's going to get a new trial. This is a ruling about trial mechanics, and there's no one better to talk to and walk us through what happened here than defense attorney extraordinaire and host of the podcast Defense Diaries, Bob Mata, to help break all this down. I know we were both reacting to this the other day on Twitter. The Supreme Court said they're going to be trying the murder case and the assault case. Obviously, the assault case was tied to this, but they said no. It was prejudicial to have them next to each other tried at the same time, even though Adam's team asked for it. For people who don't speak courtroom, what does prejudicial actually mean? And how do the mechanics of this work? Again, considering the Adam Montgomery camp is the one who wanted these combined into one trial.
Yeah. I mean, in plain English, prejudicial is, you know, in the legal sense, doesn't just mean this hurts the defense. It mm-hmm. means that every good piece of the prosecution's evidence hurts the defense. And that point of it, like legally prejudicial, means the jury used evidence for a purpose that the law forbids. And mm-hmm. propensity is what I'm talking about. And, you know, for instance, you know, he beat her in July, which we obviously had evidence of, which mm-hmm. is why I hate that guy probably more than any defendant. Yeah. I got like in recent memory, and there's some horrific, horrific defendants we've seen in recent memory. But this guy with that adorable, beautiful little girl, but him beating her in July and then turning around saying, so he's the kind of man who would have beat her to death in December. You can't do it. It goes to propensity. It's one of the things that you can't use prior bad acts for. So, you know, the law, for lack of a better term, is basically allergic to that. Mm-hmm. And you can't convict somebody of crime B just because they've committed crime A. And also because he's a shitbag. So ultimately, you know, this thing landed on the fact that the charges were misjoined. They should have been severed. They shouldn't have been tried together. And ultimately they were. And it was a miscalculation by both the prosecutor and the judge. in the sense that they knew what evidence they were going to be presenting and that they knew what impact that would have on the jury. You know, it's like you can't show the types of injuries that Harmony sustained in the July occurrence and not expect that to bleed into the jury's mindset in terms of hating this guy, you know. And, you know, it's, we refer to it as bootstrapping, you know, when you bootstrap another case onto another case in order to bolster that second case. It's just, it's not allowable in the law. As much as I hate this ruling, you know, and I do, because I mean, that piece of shit didn't even show up for his own trial. He wouldn't come out of his jail cell, but I'm sure we'll get into that. So, but
yeah,
that's essentially what prejudice in this context means.
Help me understand the arc, Bob. I you know, because to me, again, I don't speak courtroom either. How do you then do it? Because all the prior things this individual did as a human being lead to who he was that actually did the even more horrendous thing of killing her. So, I mean, how do you separate those when it's all part of a whole of who he is?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you, what you're talking about is propensity. Like, right, the whole of who he is, you can't use prior bad acts to show propensity. Like, the dog, it's just not allowed in the law, you know.
Don't we see that at the places, though? I mean,
not if they can avoid it. You know, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I mean,
like here's an example, just to try and throw in it. Like, okay, so Corey Richens' case, the sandwich beforehand.
Right.
You know, they're like, oh, he got sick and he survived. I know that. I mean, that was up. They were arguing whether that should be in or not. It obviously stayed. It was a separate charge. But, I mean, the evidence, yeah, it was kind of there. Kind of not. Kind of at the same place. I mean, so we do see it in other cases. I guess what is really getting me on this is, and I totally understand your argument and the propensity and how that works, and I get it. But the fact that they are the ones who wanted these two things connected, that's what gets me on it. It wasn't the state that said, we're going to connect these. You have no, you know, they argued for it. The Montgomery side argued for it, or Adams side argued for it. That's the part that gets me. Okay, you asked for it, you got what you wanted, and now you're using this as a strategy to get another trial. Was this part of the strategy all along on the part of the defense?
I mean, if it was a bizarre strategy.
You know,
I mean, like, ultimately, I think that they had to realize that in let me take a step back. I'm concerned about the retrial on the murder case because there is no additional evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what we saw is what we saw in terms of the evidence that they're going to have. And in the second trial, they're not going to be able to use the evidence that they used in the first trial with respect to the July occurrence of him beating his child because she was wetting herself, you know, and showing the injuries that occurred. You know, as to your Corey Richens kind of analysis, I mean, with that particular set of circumstances, what we're talking about there is like a common scheme or plan, you know, like that's one of the things you could show. She had tried to do it before. Like, this is the evidence. She tried to poison him before with the sandwich. So that would fall under the you know, the reasons that you can use 404B in terms of, you know, motive, opportunity, you know, common scheme or plan. Those are things that the courts have said, yes, you can use this type of prior bad act testimony or evidence for, you know, in a separate case. And in this particular situation, that's just they couldn't get that to fit in any of the allowable aspects of being able to use 404B. So, you know, I'm concerned because of the whole Kayla issue, you know, you know, as to whether or not they're going to be able to prove this against them. You know, so
I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, the assault evidence was rock solid, multiple independent witnesses. The murder evidence rested almost entirely on Kayla Montgomery's testimony. Yep. Kayla Montgomery not a great witness at the end of the day. You know, I mean, how big is the gap between those two evidence pools, you know, and why does that matter so much here?
Well, I mean, it matters massively because in theory, she could be the one who actually committed the crime. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's ultimately where this thing's going to lay. I mean, if you're the defense attorney for Adam Montgomery, you're pointing the finger at Kayla, mm-hmm. you know, because she was the last one with Harmony. So, you know, I mean, and that's obviously problematic for the state, you know, because you have a situation, well, did she die as a result of what Adam had done before he got out of the vehicle, or did something happen in the interim? You know, and was that at Kayla's hand? And you know, the problem with Kayla is, like you said, she's a bad witness. You know, she already pled guilty to perjury. She cut a deal. And, you know, the bottom line is she was in that car, too.
Yeah. So, and I want to get into that end of it in our next segment here. But yeah, but yeah, go
I'm
ahead,
still,
Robin.
I'm still struggling with this one just because of the whole prior acts thing to me. So, Bob, what's the difference between like Stephen Stearns and the horrendous murder of Missy Soto, and you know, with SA involved with that little girl, and this, you know, because they had to draw in his horrendous behavior in that arc in his life because it drew to the horrendous acts he did. You know, it 1 + 2 + 3 equals, you know, that. What's the difference between those types of cases and this?
Well, I think in the Stearns case, there was more evidence that, you know, he was the last one with her.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so what they're saying is, but for the fact that they put in this assault evidence,
yeah,
they wouldn't have been able to convict him.
If he had been the last one with her, would all of the prior bad act evidence be landing differently? Would the Supreme Court have looked at this differently had he just been the last person there? Is the fact that she was there, that's what the Supreme Court is saying? Yeah, but.
Right. I think it would have been more akin to the Stearns case. Right.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because like that's the primary difference is Kayla. You know, I mean, like the fact that Kayla was in that vehicle, it's not as clear cut. So mm-hmm. with Stearns, he's the last one with her. And, right. you know, they were able to geolocate where he was.
Right. It
was, you know, so and, you know, right. so ultimately at the end of the day, you know, the appellate court's going to look at that and say, all right, well, even if we found that this was an error, we're going to find that it was harmless error because the other evidence that existed in the case was strong enough to lead the jury to the verdict that it finally reached. So with here, the appellate court just didn't feel that was the case. They were like, look, if we take out this assault evidence, what do they really have on him other than he's a giant piece of shit, you know, which again, you can be a giant piece of shit. It doesn't necessarily mean you're a murderer.
So then who do you go after for the murder?
Well, I mean, they're going to go after Montgomery again. And, you know, that's why I'm saying I'm nervous about this murder case because it's not clear cut.
Well, I know. I get it, but it's just so befuddling to me that you know, death needs accountability and who else? I mean, so just, I mean, okay. So they'll get him on an assault. I mean, what the, okay. And yet there's no justice for the murder on that. It's
our system. I mean, it's interesting. Cause like on the surface, it's so angry. It's so easy to get angry at this. And cause it almost feels like our system says, yes, context is important some of the time. but other times it's not. And it's very much, and it's kind of, it's such a gray area because a lot of times, Bob, it comes down to the interpretation of the law and who's interpreting it.
100%. I mean, that's the nutshell of what the law is.
Yeah.
I mean, in every criminal case you're ever going to watch, you're going to see two different sides interpreting the same law and set of facts in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's literally what the law is. It's literally why cases go to trial, because two sides are arguing very different opinions as to what law should be applied, how the law should be applied, and what the facts and the evidence show in regard to that particular case. And, you know, I mean, that's every single trial you'll go to. I mean, most cases plead out.
Yeah.
And when they do, it's because one side typically the defense, can't find a way to effectively argue that the facts and the evidence that exist in that case can be applied or looked at another way. You know, so at that point, you're looking as the defense attorney, you say, well, you know, look, man, they got some pretty strong evidence. There's not going to be any way to kind of twist this thing into a position where we're going to be able to make a cogent argument that it could have happened a different way than what the state is saying happened. And in those cases, you're saying, you know, they got you, you know, so what I need to be doing as your attorney is trying to, and again, like I say this all the time, every case isn't murder, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of different crime that, you know, that, that may or may
how,
not.
How expected was this, you think, Bob? I mean, when you were watching this case originally, did you go, this is going to be a challenging one? Or, I mean, or do you think they stretched to make this happen?
I was concerned, you know, when I watched it, because going into watching that trial, I wasn't aware of the whole Kayla factor in the sense that I didn't realize just how involved she was in that relationship between, you know, Adam and his daughter, you know, and because I didn't heavily research that case going into it. So I kind of went into it blind, and I hadn't been paying attention to any of the pretrial stuff that had gone on when, as Tony had said, the defense had originally requested the joinder, you know, but then they later on tried to undo it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, so they weren't dying on that hill, you know, what you're allowed to do. There's nothing.
You can change your mind. Yeah.
Totally.
I think one of the biggest things in a case like this, when you see a decision like this made by the court, is exactly what we were talking about earlier, of how this is all up to interpretation by the individual that's interpreting it. And we know that, but I don't think it resonates with most people, because it's not what they do for a living. You know, they're lay people, but once you see it, it's like you realize just how much the court system works that way. And that's why people get so outraged so often. We're like, well, this case over here went this way. This one's just like this. And it's not. Yeah. It's interpretation in both ways. It's almost like the adult criminal version of, well, my parents allow me to get away with this over here, and those ones don't. And it's all about who's controlling the rules and who's interpreting them. And that is just, it's how it works, for better or for worse. That's what we're dealing with.
Why? You know, it's like out of all the things you could be doing right now that appellate courts could be doing and judges could be doing, you know, with all the bandwidth that can suck up your time. I'm just curious, like, why did this case come to that? What are your thoughts on that, Bob? Like, why this one and not something else?
Yeah, I mean, when you're kind of looking at this case initially, the timing of the defense asking for it to, you know, for all the charges to be joined together, and they try it in one particular trial, and I'm guessing here, but I think initially it was probably early on in the discovery process, they were probably thinking, all right, you know, this thing's going to be a mess for them, because they knew about the whole Kayla situation, and they're hoping, look, we'd rather just try this at one time, have it turn into a big mess between, you know, Kayla, the assault that happens months prior, and as opposed to giving them two bites of the apple and asking for severance and saying, okay, well, we'll have them try these charges then, and then we'll do the murder later, you know, because at that point you're giving the state two bites at the apple. But then the discovery keeps coming back in. And then as soon as they're seeing just how powerful the assault evidence is and how emotion evoking that is going to be for a jury, they realize, nah, we can't do this, because if we don't sever these things, they're immediately going to impute the guilt from the assault onto the murder, and you're going down. And, you know, by that time, they couldn't undo it. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, like, had they not made that move to undo it in terms of saying, like, you know, we're fine with these cases being joined, had they not done it, it would have been waived for the purposes of appeal, and we're not sitting here right now. But because they did try to have them, you know, severed at that point, it created the issue for appeal, which ultimately the appellate court ended up pulling on.
So Bob, put on your you always have it on, your defense attorney hat for Adam. you were convicted of it. You're in jail. You think this or part of it's behind you. You're moving on to other stuff. So, and I know what you're morally and ethically, you know, you're sworn to. But how do you go back in and do this again for someone who you know is a complete dirtbag? I mean, what's your ultimate goal that you're trying to do now if you're his lawyer?
I mean, if you're his lawyer, you're pointing the finger at Kayla. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. Because she, like, they're not going to be able to establish exactly when she died.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you have this situation where Adam's out of the vehicle and she's still in the vehicle with Harmony. And there's that time frame there where you're not going to be able to show that, say, for instance, Kayla smothered her, just put her hand over her mouth and ended her life, you know, while he's out of the car. Right. I mean, who knows what's going on in that woman's mind?
How do you get there? Yeah, to beyond a reasonable doubt.
It's tricky, man.
It's tricky. And that's what we're going to be getting into in our next segment here. Your thoughts so far in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.